Happy Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend and that you had a great Lord's Day with your brothers and sisters in Christ. Now we're ready to begin another episode of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. And we are currently in the book of Leviticus, which is a rule book for Levites. It's a tech manual. And we're looking at how God is teaching the Israelis how to follow instructions. And in this particular section, we're talking about food. Not all food is healthy for you if you don't cook it in a very precise fashion. So it seems as if God is taking off the table, taking off the menu, some of the problematic animal products that could cause health issues. That's a possibility. The animals that are being avoided include animals that sometimes are prone to parasites, such as pigs. And if you don't cook their flesh properly, you could end up with parasites yourself. And so God is giving them rule of thumb, this is the only thing you can eat. And so the rule of thumb for these animals are, it has to look like it's chewing the cud shortly after it eats, and it has to have a split hoof. So effectively, this has limited the Israeli people to eating only cows and sheep and goats and antelopes the wild version of cows and sheep and goats. That's going to limit their exposure to animal-borne diseases and parasites to some extent. But the bigger thing that I think is being learned here, and I spent a little bit of time about this last session, is that God is taking these guys through basic training. And they are having to learn, if God says, do it, you do it. If God says, don't do it, you don't do it. If God says, it's off limits, it's off limits. It's as simple as that. So he is teaching them to discern between what is holy, meaning God said okay, and what is unholy, God said no. So now let's move on to the seafood side of the eating. Got another good rule of thumb there, verse 9. These you may eat of all that are in the waters. Everything in the waters that has fins and scales, whether it's in the seas, that's salt water, or in the rivers, fresh water, you may eat. But anything in the seas or the rivers that does not have fins and scales of the swarming creatures in the waters and of the living creatures that are in the waters, it's detestable to you, meaning it is off limits. You are not allowed to eat it. You shall regard them as detestable. You shall not eat any of its flesh, and you shall detest their carcasses. Everything in the waters that does not have fins and scales is detestable to you. So basically, fish. That's it. And some of the fish, like catfish, that don't have scales, per se, off limits, not allowed to. You can't have mussels, you can't have oysters, you can't have shrimp and crabs and all that stuff. Now, why? Well, it's possible that the health reason for this would be that most of these non-finned, non-scaled sea creatures are bottom feeders. They are scavenger type things, and they can pick up a lot of unhealthy items in that. Just as a possibility that that's thrown out there, that might be why God goes down that route. Now, verse 13, these you shall detest among the birds. They shall not be eaten. They're detestable. The eagle. Now, when it says eagle here, we Americans, we're very prejudiced. We immediately think bald eagle. But eagle here is actually the golden eagle, the brown eagle of the Middle East. And these are really kind of counted as scavenger birds. The bearded vulture, the black vulture, the kite, the falcon of any kind, every raven of any kind, and almost all of these engage at some point in scavenging behavior and even the eating of carrion. And so that's not good. The ostrich, which the word here is actually uncertain as to what it means bird-wise. And I like some of the other translations going with the idea it might be some sort of owl. And then the nighthawk, again, some of these things are not known exactly what they are, but possibly another sort of owl or scavenger bird. The seagull, definitely a scavenger bird. Hawks of any kind. The little owl, the cormorant. The short-eared owl, the barn owl, the tawny owl, the carrion vulture, the stork, the heron of any kind, the hoopie, and the bat. Now, what you're probably a Western mindset here, and you go, what? Why is a bat listed with a bunch of birds? Remember that the Genesis division of animals are flyers. And so anything that flies is counted in this group, and bats fly. And so they're on the no-go list. All winged insects that go on all fours are detestable to you. Yet among the winged insects that go on all fours that you may eat are those that have jointed legs above their feet with which they hop on the ground. Of them you may eat the locust of any kind. Now, again, when we think of insects, we think of six legs. Here, the jumping legs are thought of as separate. And so locusts, which are basically just giant grasshoppers, the bald locust, cricket, grasshopper, you can eat those. That's what the Jewish people were told, because they are counted as clean. And they are pretty much clean when you think about what they eat. They eat vegetation. And that's exactly what humanity started at eating before the flood. And the permission was given to them to add protein to their diet from the animal world. So eating bugs that eat vegetation is only one step removed from eating vegetation. Now, I know that kind of grosses a lot of you out to think about this, but grasshoppers or locusts were a big delicacy in a lot of the Middle East. They are even to this day in a lot of places around the world. Verse 23, but all other winged insects that have 4 feet are detestable to you. And I can guarantee you that ticks and lice would be included on that no-go list because they ingest blood, and that would be unclean. Verse 24, by these you shall become unclean. Whoever touches their carcass shall be unclean until evening. So if you touch a dead animal, particularly an unclean dead animal, you have to have some time out and go through a ceremony of cleansing. Whoever carries any part of their carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. Every animal that parts the hoof but is not cloven-footed or doesn't chew the cud is unclean to you. Everyone who touches them shall be unclean. Now, why would you end up touching them? Well, maybe they died in your field. Maybe they actually might have got into your house and died, and you got to get that carcass out of there. Remember, mice would be on the list of you cannot eat. And so that also means they're unclean when they come into your house and die. And so when you remove them, you become unclean. Whoever touches their carcass shall be unclean until evening, and he who carries their carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. They are unclean to you. Now, the evening, remember, begins the next day. And so that's why it's given as the termination point. You get yourself unclean by touching this. You go through a washing ceremony. Then wait until evening, and you've got a fresh start with a new day. These are unclean to you among the swarming things that swarm on the ground, the mole rat, the mouse, the lizard of any kind. Again, they're not categorizing these animals like we categorize animals. They're categorizing them as these guys scurry around on the ground. The gecko, the monitor lizard, the sand lizard, the chameleon. They're unclean to you among all they swarm. Whoever touches them when they are dead shall be unclean. And until the evening. Now, verse 32, the transmission of uncleanliness. Anything on which any of them falls when they are dead shall be unclean, whether it is an article of wood or a garment or a skin or a sack, any article that is used for any purpose. Now, that makes good hygiene sense, doesn't it? You have a nasty little animal dies inside one of your buckets, inside of one of your bowls. Well, that bowl needs cleaned, and that's exactly what they do. It must be put into water, and then it shall be unclean until the evening. Then it shall be clean. So you wash it out thoroughly with some water, tip it upside down somewhere, and leave it alone until it's the evening, and then it should be good to go. If any of them falls into an earthenware vessel, all that is in it shall be unclean, and you're going to break it. So let's suppose a mouse falls into your grain jar that you left the lid off of for some reason, and it dies in there. Well, all that food is now gone. It's spoiled. It's counted as unclean. And the jar itself, because it is earthenware, and we know earthenware can soak stuff up into it, it's a loss. It's done. Any food in it that could be eaten on which water comes shall be unclean, and all drink that could be drunk from every such vessel shall be unclean. So what if it fell into a wine vat? Sorry, Charlie, that wine is gone, and if the vat that we're talking about happened to be made of clay, it's gone too. Verse number 35. Everything on which any part of their carcass falls shall be unclean. Whether oven or stove, it shall be broken in pieces. Now, their ovens, their stoves, were typically made of clay. And so if you ended up with one of these animals dying on your outdoor clay oven, that's a loss. Now, there's some pragmatic steps that you can take to make sure of this. You cover it up, you wrap it, you seal it shut whenever it's not being used. But if this happens, then these are the procedures. Remember, again, I'm going to stress this repeatedly through this section. A lot of this is basic training. It's when God says this is the way it needs to be, this is the way it needs to be. Pay attention. Follow the instructions. Airmen, don't anticipate the order. I remember that from basic training, because every once in a while you'd think you knew what needed to be done and you started to do it and you'd get in trouble because you were getting ahead. And that's not acceptable. You have to follow the lead. God is the leader here. And so the Israelis are learning to follow his lead and follow his instructions with precision. Verse 37, if any part of their carcass falls on any seed grain that's to be sown, it's clean. See, because what are you going to do with that seed stock anyway? You're going to stick it in the ground and it's going to rot and open up the germ inside of it, the life inside of it, and allow it to start growing. So that's not being disrupted by a dirty animal, an unclean animal landing on it. However, if water is put on the seed and any part of their carcass falls on it, it is unclean to you. So if the external shell of the seed, the husk of the seed, has already been wetted and broken, then the internal portion of it could be counted as contaminated. So that's a loss. Verse 39. If any animal which you may eat dies, whoever touches its carcass shall be unclean until the evening. Whoever eats of its carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. And whoever carries the carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. Now, this is a little bit of, we need a little bit of commentary, a little bit of structure for this. Now, meat animals were supposed to be butchered by first slicing their throats and allowing them to bleed out. And then you could prepare them for eating. If an animal that you could eat suddenly dies on its own, you could, if you actually saw the death happen, slice its throat instantly. And even though the slicing of its throat was not what caused its death, you still bled it out as best you could. So it's kind of a borderline situation here. And so it has to have a borderline application for cleanliness. So if that's the way it happened, then the person who grabbed a hold of it after it died and sliced its throat, that guy is now counted as unclean until evening. He has to go through the washing process. And anybody who eats meat from that particular animal has to also count themselves as unclean temporarily from the eating of that animal. It's a very borderline situation, understand. Verse number 41. Every swarming thing that swarms on the ground is detestable. It shall not be eaten. Whatever goes on its belly, whatever goes on all fours, or whatever has many feet, any swarming thing that swarms on the ground, you shall not eat, for they are detestable. You could add millipedes and centipedes, roly-poly bugs, snakes would fall into this category here. These things are all off limits for the Jewish people to eat. You shall not make yourselves detestable with any swarming thing that swarms, and you shall not defile yourselves with them and become unclean through them. So, you know, keep away. Verse 44, for I am he who is your God. Now, this gets back to the basic training thing that I keep referring to. God says, I'm in charge. I call the shots. I am he who is your God. Consecrate yourself, therefore, and be holy, for I am holy. Now that is, I think, the first time in the book of Leviticus that appears. I could be wrong, but it gets quoted a lot in the New Testament as a reminder that when God says, be like me, this is what he means. He means, I am holy. I do what is right, and I expect you to do what is right. And so if I tell you that something is wrong, even if it's only for temporary, it's wrong. Don't do it. If I tell you something is right and it's only temporary, then I expect you to believe it's right. Do it. So it is a basic training situation. You shall not defile yourselves with any swarming thing that crawls on the ground, for I am he who is that brought you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. This is the law about beast and bird and every living creature that moves through the waters and every creature that swarms on the ground, to make a distinction between the clean and unclean, between the whole, between the living creature that may be eaten and the living creature that may not be eaten. And so this is how the Jewish people came into possession of what's referred to as kosher law, the idea of what is acceptable to be eaten, what is acceptable for food. And so this is the base training on that. Now we shift our topic. Chapter 12 says this: He who is spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the people of Israel, saying, If a woman conceives and bears a male child, then she shall be unclean 7 days. Now, this is where I'd like to step in and remind you that the word unclean has not the same hygiene content that we have when we use the word. When we say unclean, we basically mean dirty, filthy, full of germs. When they say unclean, they are effectively saying off limits. Off limits. Sometimes it's only off limits temporarily. And so here is the reasoning behind this, is that when a baby is born, there is blood, and life is in the blood, and blood needs to be respected. And so when a woman gives birth to a baby, and the blood of life is present there, she then becomes off limits to ordinary contacts for a 7-day period, because she's been touched by the blood. Continuing, as at the time of her menstruation, she shall be unclean. Again, it's not about hygiene. When she finishes her period, she has been touched by the blood up to that point. And so it has to be 7 days before she can go back into regular contact with people, because she's been touched by something significant and made off limits by that. Okay? So, verse 3, on the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. So, basically, she has to go 7 days off limits from usual interaction after she has a baby. But day number 8 is special, because that's the day the baby gets his name and he is circumcised as part of the community of Israel. So she should be there for that. Now, once that is accomplished, verse 4, then she shall continue for 33 days in the blood of her purifying. So she's now going to go through another time of being off limits. And guess what? During this time, it's her and her baby. So it's actually an intense bonding time between mother and son. Now, she shall not touch anything holy, nor come into the sanctuary until the days of her purifying are completed. So she is basically to stay home with her new baby boy for 40 days. Now, she's allowed to participate in the circumcision on the 8th day, but 40 days is the period of mom and son being together by themselves. Verse number 5, if she bears a female child, then she shall be unclean or off limits for 2 days. weeks. There is no circumcision ceremony that needs to go to for this new baby girl, as in her menstruation, and she shall continue in the blood of her purification for 66 days. And so that's a total of 80 days that she and new baby girl are going to be get together. Now, why twice as long? It has to do, more than likely, with the fact that a baby girl carries with her the ability to give birth to new babies later. And so she is going to be carrying that blood of menstruation, of birthing, at least in concept, as she enters this world. And so she is twice as valuable. Now, I know for a lot of you guys, that's not what you've heard before. You've actually heard that she's twice as unclean. But no, she's actually twice as valuable in these circumstances. So she spends twice as much time with mom. Verse number 6. Now, when the days of her purification are completed, either 40 days for the baby boy or 80 days for the baby girl, whether for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring to the priest at the entrance of the meeting a lamb a year old for a burnt offering and a pigeon or a turtle dove for a sin offering. So once the period of confinement is over, it's time to get back to church. That's the way I'm going to present this. And since we're running out of time, I'm going to remind you that you should check the book of Luke and see that this is the source of the information for why Mary and Joseph went to the temple 40 days after Jesus was born, because they needed to take him to church for the very first time.